Hey, everybody. Real quick notice at the top of the show that today's episode of Film Sack is brought to you by you at patreon.com/frogpants. Write that down. It's easy to remember. patreon.com/frogpants. It helps the network pump away and make great content, including Film Sack. So if you love the content you're getting and you want to support it further, it's real easy. It's super inexpensive. And it's a great way to go. That's over at patreon.com/frogpants. Check it out today.
Oh, that's great. That is fantastic.
Thank you very much.
No. Fantastic for me. I can't wait to tell Sandecker that you're not going to be at the museum tonight because one of your contacts from the Nigerian underworld has found evidence of a Civil War ironclad shipwrecked in a storm
off Africa.
Yeah, right. That's what you're talking about, right? Yeah. Sandecker's going to freak.
You fat slob. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 294. My name is Scott Johnson, and I'm joined today by Brian, Mr. Lundergaard, could smell Rainn Wilson on the couch, Dunaway.
That was weird. Oh, hi. Now, remember, kids, it's important for us as indigenous people to make the Americans feel like freaking heroes for gracing us with their presence. So whenever you see them passing by in their vehicles, wave at them. That's it. Wave like an idiot. And then when they get out of their vehicles, I want you to swarm them. Yeah, like that. Now put your hands all over them. No, it's not creepy. They love it. Go ahead. And all up in their faces. Then here's the most important part. Run away like fools, young like you just met Jesus of Nazareth. Eat that shit up. Also, steal all their things. Yay, Americans. Hi. How are you?
Hi. Oh, are you? We got to talk about all the white saves everybody thing going on in this movie. Well done. Also with us, Randy, that final third took a bit of a dumb turn, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. Did I ever tell you guys about the time I worked as a camel wrangler in Morocco?
No.
Now, true story, and this true story is brought to you by the refreshing taste of Coca-Cola. So people often ask me if it's possible to jump from a galloping camel onto a moving train, or perhaps into the back of a truck. Maybe a reliable, luxurious Mercedes-Benz truck. And I always say, give me another bottle of Budweiser, the king of beers. And I'll tell you, yes, yes, the all-new Jeep Wrangler Unlimited will take you on that adventure. And something about camels.
Oh, good. Excellent.
Well, we almost had a collision because, Randy, I almost wrote the same thing about the engineer on the back who kept watching the camels go by. One camel? That's not interesting. Two camels? Wow. Three camels? I'm getting up. Right.
Yeah, it's like magpies, you know, where they say, well, one magpie is nothing. Two magpies is bad luck. Three magpies means Matthew McConaughey is on your train.
Four, maybe you're the asshole, or however that old phrase goes. Finally, Brian, this movie gave us all dirty water traveler's diarrhea ibbit.
Oh, yeah. Where's your colleague? The woman. Find her. She has to be around here somewhere in this barren desert village. Check everywhere, except for that well over there with the rope that's tied to her truck and her backpack leaning against it. You know, the hole where two friends were looking down when we arrived? Yeah, don't battle with that one. I'll just be over here next to this camel with a strong neck.
Morgan, swinging. Morgan with the cool hair, man.
Right, with his dreads.
That's pretty badass.
I like to think of this movie as maybe Morgan before the red tide turned everybody into zombies.
Oh, I love that idea, and he changed his accent to fit in, and
right, he shaved his head.
That. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I didn't know about
that hairstyle anyway.
What is that? What do you call that? Is there a name? I don't know.
It's got to be. I've seen other people wear it too, and only certain people can pull it off, and it's just.
Yeah, he gets away with it.
It's not really dreads, and it's not really like, I don't know what it is.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I don't know. It feels like it's something too that should be embarrassing now. Like it's right. like a short term trend, and then it should go
right,
away.
What happened to your Jerry curl?
Right,
it looks all flat. This is what happened to Jerry curl in the desert.
I've learned to stop doing that prediction. By the way, when the Drew Carey glasses got popular about 7 or 8 years ago, I said, "Oh, this is going to be the quickest trend ever."
Yep.
I mean, and then I saw when I saw hipster young women wearing thick black framed glasses. Yeah. I was like, okay, now it's definitely over. No, that trend is still happening. People love that.
Where
were all those buttholes?
Prison stuff or what?
Where were all those guys when I was in high school and had to wear those because that's all my mom would get me?
Right.
Like I was ridiculed for those frickin' things, and I tried to never wear them ever. And now, I mean, if I was in high school now, oh my gosh. Yeah. That would have
been going to be huge in 30 years, guys. Just wait.
Yeah,
just wait.
Would have been cock of the walk, as the kids say.
I had a mullet.
Trendsetter Johnson.
There was a time I had a mullet, and it was totally cool. And that's the kind of the inverse is what I'm saying. Like, no one ever made fun of me for having a mullet in like 1991 or something.
No, you were meant to have one then. Yeah.
Right. But those pictures have to die in a fire.
Oh, no kidding, dude.
Did you ever have a rat tail?
Oh yeah, I did in high school for a while, a little bit.
That's still here. Yeah. That's still here.
We rat had tail. So that rat tail thing, and also the little Jedi side tail thing. That's making a weird comeback around here, and I don't want that in my life at all. I really don't. I see these like seventh grader kids walking around with like a little Obi-Wan Kenobi from the prequels, little side tail. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The good thing about those is they're really easy to take care of. Just carry a pair of scissors with you.
Snip on.
Take that damn thing off. Well, anyway, enough about the trends of young people everywhere. Let's enter into the foray of Sahara, the movie that we're going to sack today. This thing came out in 2005.
2005.
Yeah, same year. So to give you some context, same year as Batman Begins, same year as Serenity, same year as some other really fine films. 2005.
To give you some depressing context.
Right? Yeah, right.
Now here's the problem. Okay, so none of us had seen it, right? At least we don't think so. I had some weird memories pop up in it, but I think it was trailers. But none of us had seen this, right, in the theater.
Nope. Nope.
And we talked a bit about this before the show, but I had a strange experience with it. I got in, and for the first roughly 2/3, I'm having a great time. Like, I'm a little surprised. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. This isn't garbage. This is actually really good. Like, these scenes are well made. This director's cool. I loved he did some episodes of The Expanse, and they're two of my favorite episodes. Right.
Little Eisner, he's a good guy.
Yeah, everything about this screams like, I'm a fan of McConaughey. I really like Steve Zahn. Penelope Cruz is always pretty interesting.
Steve Zahn, by the way, best thing in this movie. I think
by far.
Like
Penelope Cruz
is
pretty good.
The movie has a bunch of starts. I kept saying out loud, "Oh, now the movie's starting." Okay. Forget that first two scenes. Now the movie's starting.
Yeah.
And so like there was that, but I wasn't complaining because I was enjoying those starts. The thing in the river with the ironclad boat and the Civil War.
That was great.
Like totally unnecessary, but indulge me. Indulge me.
Sure. I like that. It was kind of a National Treasure beginning, basically, is how it reminded me of those
National Treasure middle. Go on.
Yeah. but even like their resolution there with the stupid cigar and the blowing up and that's fun. There's kind of an Indiana Jones kind of uncharted quality to some of this. And Steve Zahn's the best sidekick buddy guy ever in everything he's ever in. So Saving Silverman, like, for example, is a piece of shit, but Steve Zahn's in it, so it's better because he's in it.
Let's just agree on Saving Silverman.
Actually, I kind of like Saving Silverman. I'm not going to. It's not. I shouldn't speak ill of the dead. But anyway, no one knows about that movie anymore. But anyway, what I want to get to here is that on FilmSack, this happens sometimes, but I don't know that in the history of the show, have I ever been so disappointed with the final third of a film than I was this. Everything for me went south, and all the things that were charming and fun and energetic about the first 2/3 just melted away in the hot sun of the Sahara Desert and just died.
The whole thing centers on such a a randomly perfect storm, you know, set of circumstances. We're going to drive really close to this this sand dune. I'm going to have you throw sticks of dynamite out that Zahn is going to shoot instead of us just lighting them and throwing them.
Yeah.
And it's going to uncover this thing that we've been searching for the whole time.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a remake of the initial action scene. If you think about it, their escape from gunboats on the river is a great scene. It's so entertaining. But they did it already. They already did this weird, complicated thing that you would never imagine people would come up with in the middle of a boat battle.
Mm-hmm. The cigar and the gas thing?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
Yeah, and, which you can't predict. You can't say, all right, it's going to blow up after we jump off because we know how long it takes to cigars.
Precisely when it's between the other two boats.
Right.
They said the last time it didn't work with the Panama. It never worked before.
The Panama. Oh, trope alert already.
Hold on a second. I'm not even ready. It's so early. Here we go.
The code word that only the people in the movie have ever heard before. Oh, Panama. You know,
I hated that, but I also thought it was fun because watching Zahn run around the boat trying to find the thing, and we're all like, I was riveted. Like, what is he getting?
Yeah, what could it possibly be? Yeah, I did too. And when he finally got it, I still wasn't sure. In fact, it wasn't until Rainn Wilson put a cigar in his mouth that I knew it was a cigar. And then I realized, oh, they need a fuse. Like, then it all fell into place, but... Yeah, I was very curious. It's like, all right, pots and pans, cool. Books, all right? What else you got in here? Like, just digging through all of Mr. Lundegaard's shit, trying to find a cigar was pretty entertaining.
Anybody else got an example of a code word trope? Mine's Crazy Ivan from Firefly.
Oh, right. Well, Star Wars also is from
with all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
Crazy Ivan also from Hunt for Red October.
Oh, yep.
He's
right.
Doing a Crazy Ivan.
That's right. What's another? There's lots of these. Oh my gosh, I can't think of an exact example though, in my head. But there's always
it's usually like, oh no, we're in this impossible situation. The two main characters look at each other and say, "Oh, you know what we need to do here? Mm-hmm. Move number 22."
Yeah, that thing we did in Vietnam. Yep. It didn't work that time. Or but in you high know school it's gonna work.
on the football field, or
that sounds so prominent. But why can't I think of any? I know there are examples. It's, my brain won't do it. I can't find
it's
them.
Because most of it's TV, right? Don't they usually do that a lot in TV?
It's a TV trope. I mean, there's a reason why TV tropes are called TV tropes, right?
I guess so. When this episode goes up, I'm sure a lot of people have great examples that they'll put in the comments.
So how do you guys explain?
By the way, we had a lot of great comments this past week. We did ET. Yes.
Oh yeah. You know what? I've got a theory about that. You want to hear my theory? My theory is all we need to do to create a lot of buzz, back and forth, tweets, emails, support, anti-support, all that stuff, is watch a Spielberg movie.
Because true story.
When's the last time this happened?
We need to watch a very well-known movie, and then one of us needs to not like it quite as much as the others.
Yeah, or
one person needs to be contrary. Doesn't matter which way.
Yeah, exactly. Like when we watched Minority Report, that was all about me loving it and the stupid water stuff and all that, and everybody thinking I was nuts. And that ended up being one of our most controversial and memorable episodes. Right. And I think E.T. was the same thing. It just happened to land on Randy's shoulders. But we have these moments, and they always seem to surround popular Spielberg specific films. So
can't wait to watch 1941.
That's probably a good one. Also curious how you guys feel about Jaws.
Yeah, Jaws.
Because I am a huge
Jaws
fan.
We watched Jaws 2.
Jaws
no,
3.
Didn't we
watch 3D. We watched Jaws 3.
We watched Jaws 3D. By the way, that is on sale right now for $9.99.
Louis Gossett Jr. How can I forget?
Yeah. Wait, $9.99. Let me tell you how. Let me also known as how is Scott going to save $10 this month? I'm not buying that.
and the funny thing is, we watched it sans 3D on Netflix, but everybody in the 3D community agrees that this is like one of the most phenomenal 3D movies in existence. And I just can't imagine that it could change that much of what I saw.
I doubt it, but I think when they say that they have
to pop out effects.
Yeah, have to be talking about how the movie went out of its way to poke you in the eye all the time, you know?
Right.
Constantly have a stick in the face or a shark poking
shark, his face. Shark right in your face. Because that, because on Netflix, it does not play well when they just stop the shark right in the middle of the screen, like, poking right, out at you.
Yeah.
It's like, what are they doing?
Have they moved a lot of these older 3D movies to, I mean, I know the new 3D stuff is available on Blu-ray 3D, but can you get some of these older ones now on Blu-ray 3D?
You can indeed. That and that's might one be of worth them. The Jaws 3D is they've redone it.
It's that's for $10. Jaws 3D. Yeah.
That wow. makes sense because you've got a TV for that. That would probably be right. worth it.
I still don't think I'm gonna do it.
Do it. Hey, if you do it, I'll do it. We'll do it.
I just saved $20 this month. Ten of my dollars and ten of Dunaway's dollars.
I kind of want to watch that newer Piranha 3D.
Yes,
with you guys in 3D.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that either.
Come over to the house.
All right.
Popcorn. Okay. I've only got 2 3D glasses, so we're just gonna have to take turns.
They're tagged.
Now, do you have voodoo on your TV?
Oh, I do that voodoo that I do.
Yeah,
so,
so you can watch like the 2 minute preview of almost all the 3D movies they have on there. And I did watch some of that Piranha 3DD, and it was
the previews in voodoo come through on.
Yeah, the 2 minute previews do.
I guess if you do it on PlayStation, right? Okay,
right.
Probably the best part of those movies too. Mm-hmm. You know,
you can watch 2 minutes. True story. I just want to use the most 3D effects right there in the beginning.
Yes.
You know, that makes me sad inside for some reason. I want that to not be the case.
I wish this movie could have been 3D.
Yeah. This would have been all right.
Matt McConaughey coming at me.
Oh, this movie? That's this movie here that we're reviewing?
Yeah. This one.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
So it's really frustrating because, you know, okay, one of the things I wanted to compliment early about the films to get the positive stuff out of the way, I really, really like the contrast of. You are in Morocco or you're in the Sahara Desert or you're in these strange, far off places. And by the way, deserts make everything better for me. So I'm already sort of in on an idea that there's a movie it's named after the greatest desert of all time. There's huge dunes to deal with. Like it may as well be Tatooine. I'm all in. You're like, where's Mad Max? In fact, when they made that plane into a sailboat, that was kind of my Mad Max moment, which was pretty cool, I thought. That was very Fury Road. But anyway.
That was very popular during 2005, that idea that sand surfing, it kind of reached a little bit of a peak.
That is very, I don't remember like caring much about it at the time, but I remember seeing a lot about sand surfing then.
Well, right. This movie just generally has a lot of MacGyvering. Not too much.
Right.
It doesn't go overboard with the MacGyvering, but there is a lot of this. We're gonna use these things in ways that you don't expect, and that's just entertaining. It never fails.
Yeah, it's MacGyver-ish. We'll call it. That's a good way to put it. So yeah, there you go. So, but anyway, imagine my sort of excitement when things like this would happen. I love the contrast of ancient world, old stuff, middle. Not Middle Earth. What am I trying to say? Third world.
Third world. Mediterranean.
Zahn is a hobbit, right?
Third world's what I meant. Oh, he'd be a great hobbit. And
Melody Cruz is an elf.
Yeah, she's an elf. Totally. If you think of it this way, we got human, elf, and hobbit. but then to contrast that with like great old like Steppenwolf and like 70s classic rock. Is such a cool thing to me. I love that.
That was one of the comments I saw on Twitter. Somebody said they didn't understand the use of that music, but I was like, yeah, but they're kind of going for the McConaughey's character is kind of like a Brody kind of character. He's kind of like Southern rock, hillbilly surfer kind of weird.
Yeah, his name's Dirk Pitt, for hell's sakes.
Dirk Pitt.
Right.
It kind of reminded me, the combination of the music and then just the surroundings kind of reminded me of like Full Metal Jacket or... Platoon, or what was the movie with Air America with Mel Gibson?
Robert Downey. Did we ever get a chance to sack that?
No, we should.
We should. We need to. Yeah. But it's that same kind of thing where you know it's kind of a war situation or a third world situation, and then you've got this contrast of rock music in this place that has never had an FM radio.
Yeah, and I don't know what it is about that. There's just something about that.
You know what it reminded me of?
I love that. Yeah,
real strong memory is of the TV show Supernatural with the classic rock that just blares at you every time they're either driving in the car or they're transitioning to some other little town in the Midwest that you've never heard of.
Yeah,
and that thing, it's Supernatural. It started in 2005, same year as Sahara.
Yeah.
And apparently something was going on in the world where some catalog or catalogs of classic rock suddenly became available for license or something.
Got got real cheap, you would think. But either that or they started spending a lot of money, because this movie was a money hog.
Felt expensive. Yeah, it looked like expensive effects, expensive explosions and stunts, like all that stuff. Like I'm saying, man, like it has the makings, the ingredients of something rad. It just something derailed like near the end. It just happened with 20 minutes left where you went, oh, shit, really? Now we're this? This is what the movie is? And I just went, like, they took the wind out of my, well, it took the wind out of my rigged up airplane sand sailor.
Your sail car.
Yeah. And it made me just go, oh. Like, in fact, it was about then when they got that plane and they finished that little run. And then I can't remember, something happened where, I know what it was. As soon as they found the barrels underground. As soon as that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. As soon as they found that sun collector, solar collector thing in the airport, in the desert.
Yeah.
Everything from that point on, like racing to get to the train that is a mile away from the thing and finding the ability to bury themselves next to their camels
so quickly.
Yeah. And then the whole, the light collector thing, not just burning Matthew McConaughey to a piece of bacon.
Right.
And they all focused on him.
Yeah.
This brings me to my big question about this movie, which is the plot and which is the subplot? There's two real big competing things here. One is Matthew McConaughey's character, who is on a sort of like a Indiana Jones wild goose chase of an adventure.
Right. Also lifetime obsession for the stupid ship. Yeah.
Right. That's a trope, by the way.
Very
lifetime obsession.
Yep.
Great white whale.
Yep.
And then the other thing is the discovery that there's Malays in this area. We originally think that it's a plague, right? But actually, no, we discover it's something. It's something that we can actually do something about, which is a trope, right? Yeah,
very much the environment. Trope. They're killing the environment.
Yeah.
Socio-political movie to the
right. Actually, you know, that whole poisoning kind of feels like the plot, and maybe the Matthew McConaughey is the subplot.
Well, and that's what bugged me. I think that's why it shifted. And I think you're absolutely right. But the problem is it wasn't meant to be that way. They just got to the end and went, all right. Oh shit, they're poisoning all the river stuff, and the CEO guy kind of regrets it. Oh, I have a major chick in the bucket question about him in a second. But anyway, they find that stuff, and now it's all about, oh, this horrible environmental disaster. We must do all we can to stop this from happening, or it will get all the way to New York somehow. And that is where they lost me. It just really dropped me off at the curb and said, see ya. It just really bummed me out.
Yeah, you were fine with the Civil War machinery floating across the ocean to Africa.
Absolutely fine. I parked my brain early. I said, you know what? Cool. I like this. There's something intriguing about that.
How does that first scene park your brain, by the way? Because it did it to me.
Which one?
That very first scene in the Civil War. It just, for some reason, it was so absurd, but not.
It was totally like, I felt like I was watching the Wild Wild West series.
It was.
Yeah.
Well, those existed, those things, though, those big.
Yeah. Beef they fights. Did, but to that extent, I don't know how accurate that was portrayed.
Well, good point. It seemed bigger than they probably were somehow. I don't know. I know nothing about the seafaring riverboat. Sort of submarine tank unit things.
It was called the ironclad.
The ironclads.
There were ironclads.
I know that they had. Well, actually, I don't.
It was
know.
Like it's kind of like when you watch a Nazi film and they feature some Nazi tech that was almost in use, but they didn't quite get to use it in reality.
Yeah,
and this kind of felt like that. It felt like the ironclads were kind of very late in the game, and I don't think they featured as prominently as they portrayed it in this film.
Yeah, well said, Dunaway. That's actually a really good comparison, because whenever they do that in a movie with like, Hitler, if Hitler just had more time, he had these rockets that were robots that had nuclear fingers, and they could poke you in the face. Like they had all kinds of stuff like that.
When they had like the giant tanks. What was this incredibly stupidly big tanks that he got to that he never really got to use much of? The ones that were like the size of buildings.
Oh, the Hitler's tanks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had a bunch of that.
History buffs losing their mind right now.
Oh,
right.
I'm sure that they are.
The things with the things.
But that's such a fun thing, because it's like saying, ooh, boy, good thing we got him when we got him, because, man, and back in the wings, he had these weird doctors doing, like, zombie experiments, and he also had these crazy mecha robot things or something. And, like, you can run with that stuff from a fictional perspective to the point that, like, even, like, the original Wolfenstein, your final boss was Mecha Hitler.
Right.
And it was Hitler all cyborged up with, like, giant Gatling guns.
So the reason that all of the Nazi stuff works so well as tropes is that it's past the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
But it's old enough that we don't really no one watching the movie has any direct memories of this stuff.
Yeah.
The Civil War thing works because it's just past the rifling revolution, the gun revolution, and you have, like, cannons that are actually accurate and can be mounted on boats and actually cause a lot of destruction. But again, we don't really have any memories. There's a handful of people who study this stuff, but we aren't here.
Accurate enough to shoot down a helicopter in the sky.
Well, can you answer me this? Did those cannonballs back then have, like, big grenade timers on them?
Yeah.
Really? No. They just had fuses, and the explosion that propelled the cannonball lit the fuse, and then the cannonball would explode.
Oh, so that's I was sure that they faked that for the movie. I don't know why.
For sure.
I don't think they look like that. I don't think they quite work like that, but it's something, the idea is like that.
Okay, so they would still explode, though, at some point. I just thought they were big, heavy balls, the way they would be in, like, the, you know.
Pirates?
Yeah, right. Pirate
right.
balls.
Yeah, just solid pirate metal balls. That then the damage came from just them ripping through your hull as opposed to an actual explosion.
You call that shot, and that's also perfectly normal. So they use that, thing. Too. But the point is, as you go back in time, you get to access all sorts of things that you can just invent because people don't have any memories of these things.
Because they don't know, sure.
But if you go too far back in time, you have to make it steampunk.
Yeah.
It's no longer explainable.
I wonder if do you ever think there's, like, a pirate when they were just the steel balls, a pirate sitting around going, yar, one day these will have timers and blow up when we shoot them.
It doesn't really matter what pirates are saying as long as they're saying it like that.
Yeah. Yar,
it really doesn't.
I haven't eaten an apple in a month. That's scurvy. Yar.
I haven't eaten an apple in a month.
Don't go touch that trash bag over there. Yar.
Bill, I see
kill you. Yar.
I see you've got the scurvy. How long since your last apple? Yar.
My chief of security, Yar.
Here's a question I always wondered. Someone just give me an answer. Couldn't they take dried fruits on board and still get the vitamin C they needed?
Probably. Oh,
you're talking about the history buffs. Boy, they're going to be all on this episode.
I'm just saying. Yeah, it just seems to me.
Did you get an email from somebody? No, because they didn't have the effective means of drying fruit back then. No.
It seems to me like scurvy should not have been as big a deal as we believe it was.
I really wonder.
Is
the problem. Why are we so scared of scurvy in 2016? I just want to know.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to admit right up front, I know so little about scurvy and its history that you could fit my knowledge in a dried up piece of dried up prune.
Limes were the things that were supposed to, like, really help with scurvy. And I imagine if you dry a lime and all that juice, the citric acid is gone, it probably makes it a completely ineffective.
Right. Because you've created, well, all you've done. Yeah, that's true. Preserving fruit in that way, I think, eliminates the citrus part.
See, I don't. I think
anti-scurvy.
It probably concentrates the citric acid, and it just seems to me like they're like, I don't know what. Maybe there was a scurvy problem since the days of piracy on the open seas.
Yeah. Right. here's a bigger question for those nutritionalists out there who are rolling their eyes at us right now. Here's my question for you people. If I eat a plum, and that's fine, but I eat a prune. Isn't a prune a plum? That's or am I got? I may have that wrong.
Yeah.
Is that right? Okay.
Yes.
Then I eat a prune. One of them is just a fruit, and it's fine. The other one is going to shake loose the old caboose, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh. Okay. So
what's the difference? So, why is one more fiber and one's not? I don't get
it. I'm here to tell you, it's actually the concentration of the prunes. If you eat one prune, it is really no different than eating one plum. But when you drink a glass of prune juice, it's like 17 prunes.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're not of age yet to experience this. We don't know. Well, listen, when we're all in our 60s and we've got a little, you know, maybe a little blockage there, a little, you know, pretend your Civil War ship has been covered in dirt and you can't get out. I get it. You need a little prune juice. So we'll discuss that more when we get there.
Speaking of diarrhea.
Oh, actually, I have stuff to say about this, but go ahead. I bet this is along the same lines as what I have to say. It's going to be really embarrassing when I tell you this, but go ahead.
I was just gonna say the movie felt to me like it was missing all of its own like script. It felt to me often like the people in the movie weren't working with a script. Like there's a sequence really early on where Matthew McConaughey is trying to get William H. Macy's attention at a party.
Yeah.
And so he starts trying to tell him about fishing for marlins.
Yeah.
And it felt to me like no one involved knew what they were supposed to say. it was like diarrhea. Like they were just
like
saying,
improv, basically.
Yeah. But not like improv where they're paying attention to each other and saying yes and, you know? But more like they were all trying to remember what to say and they were working from different scripts.
There was a bit of that, yeah.
Yeah. And plus it was, maybe this is part of what Cussler was so mad about, the guy who did the books, because he actually, there was a lawsuit brought against these guys because he felt like the script didn't consult with him and, you know, they didn't come to him and
he didn't get final
hammered
approval
out.
on the script.
Yeah, which is too bad because you know what, he has a point. I never really think about this very often, but when a movie is adapted from a beloved book, like Sphere, for example, everyone I ever talk to who are Crichton fans are like, oh, Sphere's like one of his, if not his best book. It's so good, blah, blah, blah. But then the movie's just such a piece of crap in comparison. And I'll admit it, when I see the movie first and then I hear it was based on a book, I'm not all that motivated to get that book. I always just feel like, ugh, this is, why do I want more of this in my life? And that's unfortunate. If I was that author and this high profile thing was made and it tanked so bad and critically was so, you know, disliked and all that, I would be mad. I'd be like, gosh dang it, you guys, you've
that's
really
my
hurt
baby.
my future book sales are screwed here. Now that being said, then there's guys like Stephen King, but again, it's a chicken and egg thing. Like, how many people knew about this Cussler book before the movie? I don't know. I have no idea, but I'm guessing less.
It was popular among the people who read it.
Yeah, the 100 people who read it, exactly. Like Randy says. So yeah, I don't know. That's a hard place to be as an author, to have your work finally realized.
This is a really good book though, because a lot of the ideas were over the top, but it's a fun ride for that. And then this happened, and then this happened. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Couldn't it work the other way though too? I mean, as many times as it fails, like a really bad book that's turned into a good movie makes people go back and read the really crappy book.
Yeah, right. But I'm trying to think of a good example of that. Is there?
You know what's interesting is happening right now with Randy's favorite George R. R. Martin's Game of Thrones. They've actually outpaced his book writing. So
they've transcended Martin.
Right. Yeah, so they're going places with the characters that he hasn't even been yet.
Well,
they've lapped George R. R. Martin.
But he's dictating it, so it's not like he's, you know, he's telling them where we're going and what we're doing and how it ends.
He told them the end essentially, and they've kind of painted their path.
Yeah, but he's.
Well, I thought it's more than that.
Yeah,
it is.
He's heavily involved in that production. He's not like way off on the side saying, yeah, it ends like this, so good luck connecting the dots.
Does he always ride around in that little scooter
Is George R. R. Martin? What is he like in a little Shriner's car or something?
Yeah, a little.
No. In like a hover round, like a
right.
You know,
rascal.
A rascal, yeah. Dude. A freaking
does he have a little
rascal.
Stick and he like hits Jon Snow in the legs when he.
You as rich and famous as George R. R. Martin is, if you saw him on a scooter in freaking Walmart, you wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, right.
Just saying.
He is, you know, out of the shroud of all this great success he's had and this incredible, you know, run with the books and the show and everything else, if you didn't know him, you'd just say, oh, that's that guy who drives me crazy down at the Walmart.
Exactly. If you just saw him, you would not know that he is the genius that he is.
That's so true. Yeah, you'd be like, oh, God, he's right in front of the Mountain Dew. I want to get a Mountain Dew. And he's just blocking it with this rascal.
Yeah, that is
his
so
dumb
funny.
Little hat and his silly little suspenders.
That stupid hat.
He probably doesn't need that thing anyway.
Shave that beard, for heaven's sakes.
I think the bigger difference between what's happened with George R. R. Martin's books and other things is that the TV show has impacted the TV show. Mm. It's not so much that he wrote these books and they based a show on it and then they are now making stuff up.
Yeah.
It's that they're now making stuff up for a particular audience that is not the same as the audience for the books. And yeah. That's fascinating because that never happens.
Yeah, it's that never happens. It's super interesting. Also by every account, I've yet to talk to anybody who disagrees with me, and I'm sure someone does. There's an outlier somewhere, but I can't find them who thinks that season 6 isn't the best work they've done. It's really, really incredible. And it has to be in part due to him giving, they have less of a slate to pay attention to and more of an outline. And in the outline context, they're able to do things that are far more entertaining for me.
And they're also able to serve the fans. When you're enslaved to these books where he is specifically assaulting the reader by creating things the reader likes and then taking them away. Yeah. Once you get past that, the people making the show get to maybe steer it back toward normalcy.
I won't say I'm not enjoying it because I'm having a great time and I'm enjoying these later seasons of Game of Thrones, but I do kind of miss that unpredictableness because I do feel like a little bit like they're catering to us. I can see things coming. I'm still loving the high drama of all of it, but most of it you can usually guess. And maybe it's because we just have so much information about the characters now. But I'm kind of a little bit disappointed that there's not more surprises. I was a little bit disappointed that Jon Snow. I won't say. Anyway.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, spoilers, like but yeah. there's been too much satisfaction this season and not enough? Yes. Like, oh man, why did they do that? Yeah. That would be my only. And it's not even a big complaint, but that would be my only complaint about season 6. It is.
I just want to say, how often when you're criticizing something, do you complain that it's giving you too much satisfaction? I know.
Well, that's the thing. When 5 seasons of it has been, satisfaction isn't the right word. Maybe it's
things are working out for a lot of people and the bad, the very bad
resolution.
Yeah.
Than exactly. there had been in the previous 5 seasons.
And some bad things happen. Some bad things happen, but they happened. Oh man, we're in territory here.
I'm agreeing with Ibbot says with satisfaction because it used in seasons past, I would literally be so upset. I would lay in bed and just think, oh man, I can't believe they do that. And I'd eventually get over it and I enjoyed it. But this year it's just like, I watched it. I enjoyed it. It was great. Go to bed. Don't think anything else about it because I don't question anything because they gave me exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
So if nothing else, season 6 gets you more sleep.
Yeah, think of it that way. Well done. I don't have a bad thing to say about it. It was so good this season.
Glass half full.
So Rainn Wilson, we talked about him being in this. That surprised me because at first I didn't think it was him, and then it dawned on me that it was him.
Yeah.
Right.
Just thicker.
I don't think he had found his movie legs. He needs to say him. He didn't seem like himself.
Well, he just didn't seem like The Office. And I think that threw people off. But I thought he was fine. I thought he was great.
He's basically the guy who likes pie and sits in the back seat of the car in the National Treasure Museum, National Treasure movies.
I want to tie these things together because Clive Cussler, sued the producers of the film, and that resulted in one of the rarest things that's ever happened in Hollywood, which is the producers of a film ended up accidentally making public all of their expenditures. Yep. I mean, Hollywood is maniacal about hiding how they spend their money. So this movie is really bizarre in that we get to see exactly what they spent their money on, including things like local bribes in Morocco. And the thing that really stuck out about that to me was that Matthew McConaughey made $8 million, his base. I don't know what he actually made.
Yeah.
He was paid $8 million up front, over $600,000 per week to work on this movie.
Wow.
Rainn Wilson made a total of $45,000 to be in this movie.
45 so, grand? Good.
Put it into perspective, there were 10 different writers who were paid a total of $3.8 million. On this movie, the average writer on this movie made 9 times what Rainn Wilson did.
Yeah.
Wow.
But look what he did. I mean, honestly.
Well, I mean, early in the movie though, he was, you know, getting shot Good at, part. Shooting flares, like
those,
jumping
those
in the water.
Those weren't real guns.
No, I know they weren't, but I guess I'm just saying he didn't feel like a third wheel until he got back to the boat and smelled bad and Lundergaard smelled.
That was a fun scene.
I hated that scene because how did he not see him when he walked in, and how did Rainn Wilson not hear him? It's like, I wonder what that smell is.
This guy's sleeping on the couch right next to you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I forgot. I have perfect tunnel vision where I can't have any peripheral vision, and I didn't see Rainn Wilson flopping around on my couch and covered in feces or whatever was the problem there. But we never got back to my... So you were talking about diarrhea dialogue. This isn't going to shock anyone who knows me very well, but all I could think about during this movie was, man, y'all are way too energetic and running around like heroes in the kinds of conditions that you would all just have the freaking runs all the time, man. Right. You'd all be sick all the time. There's no good food. Right. The water's terrible. You can't find a cold Coke in the middle of the desert. You're just screwed. Like, that's all. I was just thinking, oh, this is like the worst case of like, shouldn't have had that street taco kind of lifestyle. And
it's, you know, you just basically take a big case of Depends with you and
let it rip.
That'll allow you to, that'll allow you to just go unfettered. So you can find a nice oasis to rinse off.
I really like the idea of big bulky underwear, big bulky the disposable diaper on Steve's right. On is a great idea.
Steve's but, on some Foley work going on there.
I don't think I don't think Depends is a solution to anything, because all it does is change your intestinal problem into a smell problem.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And it really keeps it close to you, you know? Like,
I think it just buys you a little time.
Adult pull-ups, they should call it. Or smear-ups, as I used to call them.
Oh,
hey, when stop. my kids were little, they just, I don't know what the deal was, but we pull-ups were a nightmare. They just would cause problems in the most public places ever, and so we had to rename them. They were called smear-ups. And you did what you could. You'd get them, you know, you'd take a bunch of wipes, you'd take care of business. But at the end of the day, they're all grown up now and normal people. All right. They had planned a sequel, but it got canceled because the box office sales were real bad. Now, if this movie was released today,
the box office sales actually weren't that bad. It was just that bad in comparison to the huge budget they had.
True. It would have, you know, that's absolutely true. But here's the thing. If this movie was released in 2016, I have a theory about this. McConaughey, maybe not this year, actually, because his Free State of Jones is tanking at the box office. But I feel like at the height of McConaughey-ness in the last few years, this movie would have probably done a little better. In 2005, we were still sort of not sure where he's ending up. He's not...
Rom-com back and forth.
Sure. Yeah. And I really... I mean, I'll say it again. I've said it on the show before. I really like Matthew McConaughey a lot. I think he is super interesting. He's a little one note sometimes, but I don't care. Oh, I like the
such
note.
A stock character though. Like it felt like the character, the person from Contact had been transferred into this universe.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Yeah. Like a guy who's super smart and kind of professional, but also just listen, man, I'm going to grow my hair out and be a hippie on the beach. Like there's that he embodies that or embodied it for so long. But then yesterday, I saw set pictures of him as the Man in Black who fled across the desert and the gunslinger followed.
And he is Randall Flagg.
Yeah, Randall Flagg.
I'm going to hang out with you at your big telescope for a little while. Then I got to head back down to Mali because I'm looking for a boat that I think is buried in some sand.
Nailed it. That's exactly the character. But man, I'm not kidding when I say this. I think he is dream casting for Randall Flagg. I love that idea.
I want to believe Scott Johnson.
I know. Listen, there's a lot in the air about this, and it's my favorite book series of all time, and I've read it more than any other books. I want this to be so good, but seeing that picture of him and knowing the kind of sarcastic, basically knowing what I saw from the first season of True Detective, where he sat at that table and just chewed up the planet with his awesome, amazing dialogue. That's Randall Flagg. So take that performance and then add some more sardonic kind of evil elements, and you've got Randall Flagg. Like, that's the character.
I've been screaming for over a decade now. 10, 15 years ago, the Dark Tower should have been made, and it should have been Viggo Mortensen as Roland the Gunslinger, and it should have been Kurt Russell as Randall Flagg. They're all too old now.
Yeah.
I would argue that McConaughey's too old, but they're going for an older look on all the characters. That's fine.
Yeah,
we missed a great opportunity.
I agree, but I think the Idris Elba / McConaughey combo is a strong one. Also, keep in mind, and Stephen King's already said this, and if you know the book series, you'll know why this is happening. So I don't want to say too much because I love that series, but this is a this is a deviation from the books in lots and lots of ways, and they can get away with that and still be true to the books, which is, if you've read it, you know what I'm talking about. And that's super interesting to me. Oh, I can't freaking wait. My gosh, it better be good, dude. It better be good. Don't blow this. Don't freaking blow it. Soundtrack's awesome. I liked it a lot in this movie. Thought it was great.
Yeah.
They got a lot of just really good mileage out of both the theme and, of course, all the songs and the licensed stuff.
Steppenwolf. And
that reminded me, Brian. So there's a remix of kind of a techno-y kind of remix of Magic Carpet Ride. Mm-hmm. About 2005 or so, I found in MP3 format somewhere and fell in love with, and had it on a playlist constantly. It's one of my favorite things ever. The guys from Crystal Method helped work on it. So it was like this huge deal, and I just assumed, oh, that's just a thing that got made. Isn't that great? I love it. I hear that version of this movie, and I realize, oh my gosh, that's where this is from.
It came from this movie, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember hearing it back in the 90s and didn't make the connection. I completely forgot about it until hearing it in here.
Yeah, it's weird. I liked it, though. I love that version of that song, and I just liked everything about the music was cool, except Seriously. That I felt like it was out, like the movie didn't live up to it in the later third.
Have you watched Supernatural, the TV show?
Yeah.
Scott?
Oh, yeah.
No.
All okay. 9-10 seasons of it.
Well, it's like 15 seasons. I've seen I probably have seen 3 seasons or something back in the early part of it.
The first seasons were the best, if you ask me. They went somewhere. It's still good.
People love it, but it's mostly like it's boy candy now. It's just like, that's why
I'm just talking about the music, man. I'm just talking about
music's great.
Dude.
Music's great.
Okay. All right. Making sure.
It was Dean Ackles
in that car and that music, that's just right on spot.
From 05 to 07 is roughly my time with it, and I thought it was great at the time. I think that guy's car is super cool. Like the dad who's now Negan.
Did we ever watch Phantasm 2? Because that was the first time I saw a old school Himikudo with, it was kind of.
Oh, I don't think we did.
Phantasm 2?
Have we seen any of the Phantasms?
I think we saw the first one.
Did we?
I think so.
I'm thinking of Waxworks. Every time you guys say
with
Phantasm.
I know, right? It does feel like it.
He just passed away.
The tall man and the ball with the knives coming out of it. I feel like we watched it.
I don't think we have. Hold on. I'm going to look. I want to, though. When you just say the word Phantasm, it just makes me want to watch it. Phantasm.
No, I'm not seeing it listed.
Yeah, we didn't do it. I bet you this has been on a list and fell off Netflix or something. Because I have a memory of us talking about it before.
The car in Supernatural is a 67 Impala, and I'm telling you, that car was available for any one of us, the four of us, to buy when we were in high school for nothing. That car was the cheapest piece of iron imaginable, and then something happened in the later 90s, like to the economy and to collectors and so forth, and now it's unobtainable.
I had a 72 Impala. That was my first car. My grandpa gave it to me. Yeah, and it was this horrible olive green, but it had tire skirts on the back. I mean, it was a massive engine too. It was a ride, man. You just riding along.
You had to fill it with gas every time you took it anywhere.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
It just kills me that, like, I'm telling you, when I was in high school, that car, that 67 Impala, it wasn't cheap, but for a couple grand, you could have bought a dozen of them and parked them in a couple grand each.
Yeah.
You could have bought a dozen of them, parked them in a garage somewhere, and now you'd be very wealthy.
I put the 71 Plymouth Barracuda from Phantasm link in there in the, y'all guys want to check that out later.
Beautiful
car. Yeah, look at that.
How do we get on the cars?
Oh, that's a nice car, dude. Hold on, though. What's this voice? Oh, this is from the movie.
Yes, it's the movie.
I just want to see this.
Don't you love movies where people drive down the center lane? They just don't care. They just ride down right in the middle of the road.
Right.
That is a beautiful car.
Got a nice enough car, you can do that.
Oh my gosh, I would drive that. Oh, that is a hot car, dude. Mm-hmm. All right, yeah, you're not wrong about that. All right, I got one of these for you. A little pre-prepared one here. This trope is one I hate. It's where a stupid ball leads people to stuff.
Oh,
yeah. What is that called? There's a term for that in filmmaking.
I don't know, but I hate it.
What is the term? Yeah.
Oh, the minute he had to go after the ball, I went, oh shit, the ball's going to take him somewhere. Like, it's going to take him. Right. And sure enough.
Yeah. And it's funny because you even see the ball, like, run into a little kid down the street when he first misses it.
Yeah.
Right. And like, it's going to hit this kid down the street. That's the kid. That kid would have the ball. It would not roll its way down into this little cavern.
Yeah.
Right. And but they kind of reinforced the idea that it was okay for that to happen by showing at the end of the movie where it rolls down again. And that's where they're keeping the gold, by the way, not part of the United States, since it was those rebel people during the Civil War. They weren't part of the United States.
That's true.
That's not America's gold.
No, that's not America's gold. That's somebody else's gold. That's Steve Zahn's gold.
I just want to stand with Scott for a moment. If a TV show, a TV show that's a, you know, like a serial mysteries or adventures TV show starts with a couple of kids throwing a baseball back and forth, and one of them overthrows the other one, and the other one slowly walks to pick up the ball, you are about to find a dead body.
That is absolutely it. That's totally
isn't that
it.
Okay for
CSI or whatever.
Totally.
Isn't that okay for starting an adventure? But I mean, this wasn't starting the adventure. This was like continuing.
No, it was a terrible. And, it was a terrible plot device.
Leading them to where they needed to be.
Exactly, right, but it was so lazy, though. It was like just, how do we get from here to there? I don't know. How about Steve Zahn follows a sentient ball into a freaking thing? It was like, you know what? I got a name for this trope: Lassie Ball. That's what we're gonna call it.
Lassie Ball.
Where's
the Timmy?
Yeah.
Where's Timmy?
Wait, he's down in the well.
The whole movie.
Where to go?
The whole movie was about you know, just things leading them to where they wanted to go. So I kind of wanted there to be some kind of representation of the greater power that was leading them to all this, but there wasn't. It was just happenstance.
Yep.
All the way through.
It was bad. I also have this chicken in a bucket here, which is this. And you guys may not remember this. I felt no resolution from this. So at the very end, bad guy gets away in the helicopter. And he's sort of like weirdly sympathetic bad guy. Like on the one hand, he didn't realize he was poisoning groundwater. And on the other hand, he's still a
once
douche.
Once he found out, he kind of didn't care.
Yeah.
Once they said just, money, he's like, nope, I'm done.
Yeah, money meant everything to this guy who you knew from the very beginning wasn't trustworthy. But anyway, he takes off and leaves. And at the end of the movie, I forgot the actor's name. He's been
Delroy Lindo.
Delroy Lindo.
Yes.
How can you forget the name Delroy Lindo?
Who is so underused in this
Delroy?
Movie. He's super cool, that guy. But he pretends to be a waiter and pours water for this guy that he drinks. What was the idea there? Was that the poison water?
It was the poison water.
Yeah.
He's with the CIA, so he was trying to politically change the landscape by murdering him.
By assassinating
that final
that
agreement. Right.
Okay.
That was the final agreement between him and someone we haven't talked about this entire movie, which is William H. Macy, who did a fantastic job.
So are we to assume the chicken in the bucket part for me was it wasn't obvious that's what he was doing. I guess maybe it was. It was so obvious it didn't feel obvious. And I guess the guy dies now? Am I supposed to just wonder?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just an assumption. And that's all I could get from it.
Yeah.
I mean, all we talked about the whole movie was poison water. Of course, the representation of water in this movie represents something, Scott.
Yeah, that's true in this case. That's true in this case. You're right about that. Interesting. I don't know. I just thought that was.
The other aspect of the water thing that I did enjoy that I wanted to I tried to understand was the fact that McConaughey very very purposely said that only. The only good things that ever happened to him, or all the good things that happened to him, were on water.
Yeah.
And he was out of the water in the desert, literally.
Yeah.
And yet good things were still happening to him. So I wasn't quite sure where they were going with
that. He has to say a new phrase. He has to say, the only good things that ever happened to me are in water, and then this one time on the sand.
And then this one time on the
sand. Yeah, and then the one time in the
desert. Which is like dirt water.
Yeah.
Ironclads keep getting older, and I just stay the same age.
It just felt so much like Dazed and Confused and Contact. Like I wish I hadn't seen those movies before seeing this one.
No, you don't wish that.
Well, I mean, basically, aren't we just saying then that that aside from the rare like Mud and Dallas Buyers Club, are we saying that maybe Matthew McConaughey can only play one type of character?
Maybe, but. I don't know. That True Detective stuff is incredible, and it's very different from those things. I don't know. I think this is just a guy who played that thing you're talking about for many, many years, and now recently has become something else or can be something else, and that something else is really impressive when it hits. And I think
he's... Yeah, but what I'm getting at is that I never felt that sensation in Dallas Buyers Club or in True Detective, so there must be something to it.
Yeah.
You know, it can't just be, you know, it was a badly made movie, but McConaughey is also doing something wrong, right? I hate to say that about like Dazed and Confused, because he was fine in Dazed and Confused. Was it the mustache
in both of them?
Well, because I mean, but in Dazed and Confused, I mean, he was 19. It was his very first role. Like, I don't know. I can't say too much about what he was doing there, but he was basically just being his Texas self in that movie. And I think later when he became hunky and, you know, was working out at the local playground or whatever the deal was at the time, where he was at the jungle gyms all the time, and became this like...
Look out, kids. I got to build my guns.
He became like this sexy symbol guy. I think that's just what Hollywood wanted to pay him for. So I think that's why every role felt like that, because that's what you do. And then he has this male advantage. Somebody out there right now is going, you social justice warrior for calling a male advantage. Yeah, F off. My point is that... When men age in Hollywood, they have more opportunities. That's just a simple mathematical fact. And so I think that his opportunities as he ages have given him, nuance. And he doesn't have to be the surfer dude anymore. But all that said, I kind of like the surfer dude. Anyway, go ahead, Evan.
Let me ask you one more question while we're talking about him and his age. Let's say you've got to put him into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Who do you? Who do you cast him as?
Ghost Rider.
You want him to be Ghost
Rider.
Hero or villain, or can I choose?
Anything you want.
Okay.
Even side character, if you want.
Okay.
I have one that I think is good. I think he's too old to play Gambit anymore, but Gambit seemed like the obvious one back in the day.
He's got the jawbones for it and everything.
Right, and the Cajun accent.
He could do that. That's really good, actually.
I'll throw mine out and see if it sparks anything, but I think he could play a good Corsair. Leader of the Starjammers, Cyclops' dad.
Yeah. See, they haven't even explored that storyline much. They've peeked at it. They really haven't explored it. So yeah,
it's also
the problem is too many of these things have already come and gone. Like, if there had never been a movie, I would have said, oh, he's Star-Lord. He's perfect for Star-Lord.
Yeah, a little younger, but he'd have been a good Star-Lord.
But then a better person came along and nailed it.
And Star-Lord's dad, I mean, they've cast him as Kurt Russell, but.
Yeah,
you know, just in the very little that we know about Star-Lord's dad, seemed like Matthew McConaughey would have been a potential choice there too.
Yeah.
When that movie comes out, I'm going to go into IMDb and say Matthew McConaughey was also considered for this role.
Yes, that's right, and Sylvester Stallone. I got it though.
Okay,
you got to forget anybody who's ever played this role before.
Okay,
now imagine Matthew McConaughey as the Green Goblin.
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah, I mean, he's got at the age he's at now, he's kind of got a Willem Dafoe vibe anyway, a little bit.
Now forget Willem Dafoe.
Well,
please.
Randy just told you.
No, you're right. I'm supposed to not remember him, but it's hard for me. Yeah, he'd be good. He'd be great.
I got it.
All right.
Texas Twister.
Whoa, really reaching.
Yeah.
Super reaching.
How about Jonah?
Everything.
Could be Jonah. Jonah Hex or something like that. Be all right, maybe.
Oh, Jonah Hex. Yeah, there you go.
I'm trying to think. I can't think. I know we're in Marvel town here. I'm trying to think of a DC side thing or something. I can't think of anything.
DC.
Yeah, maybe.
Lobo.
Everybody wants to be Lobo.
Of course, he would have been a great Joker, but again, better Joker came along.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. He could have actually played
too subtle to be Joker.
I don't know.
Right. I disagree.
I think he could have been Joker.
We've kind of had our going back and forth. We've had our thing going back and forth for a long time.
I would have believed that until recently. And now, you know, I would have said Heath Ledger was way too subtle. My gosh, Heath Ledger had never raised his voice in a movie.
But you can hear McConaughey say, "You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?" You can hear it.
Oh, for sure.
In that accent, you can totally hear it.
Which is dumb and never should have been part of the Joker, the movie Joker lore anyway.
Yeah, I think there's like a lot of indie books he would be suited for. Like characters that are a little off the beaten path. I don't know that any of the Cape and Cowl stuff works anymore for him at this stage. But I just find him really fascinating and he doesn't annoy me. And I think he's kind of great. So. And I liked him in this, you know, he's just
a
cool dude.
You know who's fascinating in Sahara is Penelope Cruz.
Mm. My God, she's gorgeous.
Second highest paid actor on the payroll.
Yeah.
Just was in great demand 10 years ago. I kind of wonder if she's still pushing in her career, because I haven't seen her in anything in a long time.
Post Frida, I feel like things dropped off a bit.
That was Salma Hayek, wasn't it?
Was she Frida? I was like,
you're right. Wrong Frida. But,
wrong Latina.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're totally right about that. I mean, she's been in a ton of stuff. Here she is, you know, she's in that new Escobar thing, which sounds interesting.
Yeah, she was in Zoolander 2, which no one saw.
Right.
Queen of
Spain.
You
ever notice, like, how you get Swedish actresses and German actresses and Australian actresses who all can pull off a completely believable American accent, like can completely sound American. Yet you look at Sofia Vergara and Salma Hayek and Penelope Cruz, and they always, I think there's something about the Latin accent that makes it very difficult to push that deep down and like channel an American accent.
I would argue that no one really tries, because why would you? like with Sofia Vergara, you have one of the funniest people who's ever lived, and she's funniest in her accent. Yeah. You know, her comfort zone.
Is she really one of the funniest people who has ever lived?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Really? I don't know if I'm going that far.
I might not totally completely agree with that.
She is astonishingly funny, and it comes out of nowhere, and suddenly you realize Sofia Vergara knows how to be a ventriloquist. Like, it's just amazing. But anyway, like, I can't imagine anybody's ever asked her to sound like she's from New Orleans. Like, why would you?
Well, yeah, and I guess the thing is, you know, it's not like they could pull off the look as well, like the American pale.
Yeah.
You know, they've got slightly darker tan skin than the typical American.
Yeah. I don't know. That's an interesting point. I'm still trying to get over this idea that she's one of the funniest people ever to live.
Dude, seriously.
I like her. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think she's pretty great, but I mean, beyond Modern Family, what other than Modern Family, what are we pointing at? I don't know.
I mean, you've just
Witherspoon, like, movie from last year.
You just like Modern Family is her body of work, because, you know, she spent the last like 7 years doing that.
So you got Robin Williams, you got I don't know,
Eddie Murphy,
and right George next to them, Carlin. George Carlin, yeah. Right next to them, you got sitting right there on the end of the table, Sofia Vergara going, "Hello, everybody."
which brings up a very interesting point, which is, do we automatically put stand-up comedy at the top of the funny listing? Like, do we rate?
I think that's the ability to, because it's
a talent. It's a specific set of skills, stand-up comedy. Right. And a lot of comedians don't ever do it. They never used it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it depends on your basis, because a lot of stand-up comedians write their own, well, almost all stand-up comedians write their own stuff. Whereas when Sofia Vergara is on Modern Family, it's her delivery and it's her timing, but it's somebody else's words.
Someone's writing for her.
And like Wanda Sykes or
let me give you the perfect example. Bob Saget, hilarious comedian. Have you seen America's Funniest Home Videos?
Yeah. Right.
Or Full House, for that matter.
Right.
Yeah.
Full House.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, people don't. That's the thing, that his persona on TV had so eclipsed his stand up that people still remain to this day shocked at how blue he works on stage.
Right.
Like, he'll do a bunch of dirty comedy and they're like, "What the hell happened? I thought he was like the dad on Full House." Right. It's like, no.
An American dad.
He was always this. That was a fake thing he did. You know? Like, I don't know.
The most I've ever seen people walk out of a stand-up comedian's show was about 20 years ago, when news radio was still on TV.
Oh, this is an Andy Dick story, isn't it?
And no, this was just before that freaking Eating Beatles TV show. Joe Rogan.
Eating Beatles TV show, and I was thinking the Beatles, like the Beatles. Yeah.
Joe Rogan was doing stand up at the Capital City Comedy Club in Austin, Texas. I went to see him, and the entire crowd walked out. Right. Like, it was like maybe 30% of the people in the room stayed after 10 minutes. And it was like they didn't realize that he would be a different person than he was on news radio.
Right. No, the reason I thought you were going Andy Dick is because he was here in Salt Lake doing a show, and I can't remember the context if it was him on his own or if he was opening. I can't remember, but he was so bad and pissed off the crowd so bad and was so high. And there was so much going on, I guess, with him at the time that I had friends who went and they all walked out. And I thought, man, Andy Dick is not he's not the lovable nerd from News Radio. Like there's two examples on News Radio where you're like, yeesh, you know, sounds like Phil Hartman was the only guy that was actually nice on News Radio.
For the record, I saw Joe Rogan do stand up like 17 years ago.
Yeah.
He killed. Mm-hmm. He was so funny.
He's popular. People like him.
But like I say, stand up is
where would you rate him against the Sofia Vergara?
Right. Well, that's what I'm getting at. How would you compare them? You can't compare them. Like it's just a totally different set of skills.
Sure. It's a very different set of skills.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like Sofia Vergara is really, really talented, very funny on Modern Family, but I can't imagine her doing something outside of that character and being as good at it. Well, I feel like if you put her in your movie, she's going to play Pritchett, whatever. Can't even think of her name on Modern Family. She's basically going to play the same character that she plays on Modern Family.
Should be Jay's wife from Columbia. Yeah.
But it doesn't say much about being funny, though, because, I mean, I promise you George Carlin never had any range as a comedic actor, but he was one of the funniest people that ever lived because he was so good at writing his own stand-up.
He was good on, what did we say?
Remembering it.
What was he? Did we ever?
Bill and Ted.
Bill and Ted, yeah. No, he's actually really shitty on Bill and Ted, to be honest. He was not great in that. But he was great on Dogma. There you go. That's the one I like him in. He's great in Dogma.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I forgot about Dogma. He was really good in that.
Great in that. In my opinion, this will cause some controversy, so get ready, internet. But the last good Kevin Smith movie was Dogma, in my opinion. I think everything since that. You know,
I think Kevin Smith is. I enjoy Kevin Smith now for his just look at geek culture. I enjoy him more there than him making movies as a director. Right now.
They record about once every 6 months. They record an episode of Hollywood Babylon right here at the Irvine Improv. It's just a mile away from where I'm sitting.
Yeah.
And I have a bunch of friends who go.
Yeah.
They love it.
Yeah, he's great. There's nothing wrong with Kevin Smith. Don't get me wrong. I like Kevin Smith. I think his movies have been poop, and his newest one, the trailer for it, makes me cringe to the point that
it's kind of like this. I think directors suffer from this as well as any other group of artists. Like, I remember anytime you see a heavy metal band that does well and then breaks into the mainstream, they immediately lose their edge because they no longer are angry. You know, they can't do that angry thing because they're rich. Yeah. You know, and everything is actually going their way.
Society that they've railed against.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think Kevin Smith is kind of the same situation. He's gotten so deep into the culture of geekness. I don't think that he's really living maybe his original life and all that things he wanted to say, I think it's kind of changed over time.
And you know who broke him and ruined him? Mm. Prince. Prince apparently
Prince did it.
Broke Kevin Smith, and he can never recover from that.
Wait.
I think Kevin Smith can come back. I think Steven Spielberg to me felt like after AI, after he tried to take on the role of
Stanley Kubrick,
I think he has never recovered fully, but he is. I think Bridge of Spies was a good.
You think that was his big new comeback to it? Yeah, probably.
I think he can. I think he can recover.
Well, the BFG's doing okay this weekend. BFG opened this weekend. People like it. Seems to be. I mean, it's kind of Spielberg from the '80s a little bit.
We all agree though that title is horrible, right?
Well, only because we all grew up with Doom.
If we hadn't grown up with Doom,
we would see it differently because that meant big effing gun in Doom. And in BFG 3000 was it or whatever, but the and that was the gun.
Is that not what it stands for in this movie?
No, it stands for
big friendly giant,
and it's an old
Roald Dahl.
It's old Roald Dahl book from ever ago, okay. So it predates Doom. So you know, F Doom.
Oh, that's hilarious! I didn't realize it was a Roald Dahl thing too. Okay, wow, I'm totally out of the loop on this whole BFG thing.
So there's a whole generation of people who look at that and just have all these wonderful feelings about the Big Friendly Giant or the BFG.
That's the name that should have been the name of the movie.
I agree because they just discounted an entire generation of 20 somethings who grew up with Doom, who are now in their 30s and 40s, who only know it as the best gun in the game that would wipe out all characters on screen at once.
When's he going to shoot that big damn giant? When is it going to happen?
The BDG is what it should have been. Big damn giant. All right. So we should probably do some clips. You want to do some clips?
Wow, yes. we totally got off topic, but I enjoyed all those conversations.
I did too, yeah.
This movie had some of the best, like, standalone dialogue ever.
I agree. It's pretty good. I only captured mostly, I'm going to be honest, I captured mostly Steve's on stuff because
I bet say good. He always had the good
It
lines.
Doesn't play well as clips without him in him, I'm afraid, but there's some, like him whispering here. This is pretty good.
Is there something about a rabbit going around a tree or something?
Oh, he was trying to figure out how to tie a tie.
Yeah. Not interrupt. He was being very courteous of the phone call that was going on.
That's really good.
This is, you heard this at the top of the show, but I just want to play it again, the short bit.
Sandecker's going to freak.
Freak. Freak.
Also, Sandecker, great name. Freaking love the name Sandecker. And you saw at the end of this, they clearly wanted sequels, and they wanted like a movie series that was like, all right, the financier and head of this organization of your little offshoots off the record spy organization is now going to be Mr. Lundegaard with his big boat, and he's going to send these guys off on these little trips, and now the government is going to give them carte blanche on what they want to do. Like, you could see him setting this thing up, and then nothing.
It could even be a weekly episodic television show.
Totally what it felt like.
Yeah.
I'd watch that. I would totally watch that.
And I think you also have to do that along the way. Like that boat sequence we were talking about where Matthew McConaughey is suddenly James Bond and he's doing all these amazing things. Like, that's required for you to get in your head, oh, this could be a movie series, and he would be the James Bond of it.
Yep.
That was the idea, I think, too. They wanted to create that series of James Bond kind of.
How many times have we done this, though? The Americans keep trying to do this. We keep trying to make an American James Bond, and I think Jason Bourne's as close as we've gotten.
Really?
Yeah.
I want to say XXX is my favorite James Bond-esque.
Oh, it was definitely the attempt. That was definitely what they were trying for there, but it failed. I mean, I know they're making a new one. They're making a new one, and so maybe they'll bring it back. But that was the goal, right? Is to say, he's edgy in Underworld, and it's different, but it's kind of like our own James Bond, and it just didn't work.
It's the Generation X's James Bond. Yeah. So what do you consider Jack Reacher? Is that also Bond-esque, or is that more?
Those are just books people like. I don't know. I hated that movie so much. I really disliked it. I wanted to like it because I like Tom Cruise movies, and I like, you know, spy novel crap, and I hear the books are great, but I did not like that movie. It bored me to death. Did not like it. So
the thing is,
they got a new one.
The thing is, no one's willing to just rip off James Bond. They instead are determined that it's going to be a person who has a mysterious past and has a memory loss problem and so on and so on. You know, like, just rip off James Bond. Just make him a super spy that's American.
Yeah.
And
but do we hate the CIA so much in America that we couldn't find a hero?
I think we could. I think we totally could.
I mean, we kind of do that with we kind of like Marshals better here in the United States. We have a lot of Marshall movies, but as far as CIA goes, we kind of...
We just get weird with like how flawed they are. Like, I would argue, you know, Die Hard became a kind of a James Bond series in a weird way. Like, it wasn't at first, but it sort of became that. Like, this idea that there's this one guy who comes from the streets, or he's a otherwise flawed dude, but when the shit hits the fan, like, we're just so obsessed with doing that. As a culture, I don't know why we are, but we never, like, even, I would even argue Daniel Craig is a return to trying to be that a little bit. Like, he's a little more like the Fleming novels, where he's tortured and a little more troubled and
dark and right.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's just where we're at and there's nothing we can do about it, but I would love it if we just had cool CIA agent man doing the business, you know? I'd be all right.
Doing the business.
Yeah. Starring Melissa McCarthy, because that was so, so good.
If we're doing a popularity contest between funniest ladies working today, I'd put Melissa McCarthy above Sofia Vergara.
Have you seen Spy?
No, but I want to. I hear it's great.
You should. You should see
it. It's on HBO this month. So
oh, is
you should
it?
Check it out.
Oh, we should totally check it out.
I feel like it's the same. It's a very similar Melissa McCarthy character that we've seen before.
Yeah.
Sure, but
I feel like she has a hard time getting out of that role as well. But
it's everyone else in that movie that's so funny.
Right.
Jason Statham's great,
supporting
right?
cast. Yeah, it's Jason Statham repeatedly showing up in a different disguise that you see right through.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I finally saw, I meant to say this to you guys, because we watched Fast and the Furious 2 not long ago, Too Fast, Too Furious. I saw 7 finally, because I hadn't seen the new one. And
okay,
I saw it in the dentist chair. Because I had a long dental thing going on, so they had me watch a movie, and it's earbuds that blocked out sound and big screen, so it was actually a very nice viewing of it, despite what was happening to my mouth at the time. Anyway, the best. So two things that came. Two things that came away with. The Rock's in it for like 5 minutes. I thought he was like all up in this. He's not. He's barely in it. He hurts his arm in the first scene, and then that's all you get from The Rock. And secondly, what was my point? Oh, the best part of the movie is Jason Statham as the bad guy.
Yeah.
The rest of it is not that great. I don't know why everybody's freaking out. It was okay. Because
people love Paul Walker, and the ending, the last 10 minutes of the film is a funeral for Paul Walker.
I guess so. I don't know. I guess it was all right. It just, and then there were some cool stunts, the car going from building to building in Dubai or Ubi Dhabi or whatever the hell it was.
Wow.
I don't remember the name of it. Abu Dhabi. That's it. That's where it was. Which, by the way, listen, Abu Dhabi is a real place, and it sounds fake, and it sounds a little bit.
And it's fun to say.
Yeah, and it's fun to say, and it also sounds like we're being offensive, but we're not. It's a place. Abu Dhabi. Take that, internet, listening to me right now, and hold your emails.
But not Abu Dhabi.
Abu Dhabi. Or is it what did I say?
Would you say? Ubu Dhabi?
Ubu Dhabi.
Ubu Dhabi. Scooby Dooby. Scooby Dooby. That's it. All right. Here's a call. What's this? Oh. Call it what it is.
I understand you believe there is some sort of plague coming out of Mali.
We don't like to say plague.
What do you think it is then?
A plague.
Yeah, it's a plague.
Just how many times did you say plague?
Yeah.
That was hysterical. Plague.
She's so cute. She's a cutie. Yes. Mm-hmm. Which one had the eyebrow that went all the way to the middle? Was that the Frida? God.
That was Frida. That was Salma Hayek.
The movie was Frida.
All right, the movie. No, I don't. I don't mean. Okay, well, who drank whiskey off the foot? Or no. Tarantino drank whiskey off one of their feet.
Salma Hayek.
Okay. All right. I don't know why I conflate the two. I just have them.
And probably Uma Thurman, but you just didn't see it.
Yeah. There were feet all over the place. All right. Here's one. About a dad and coins.
Hey, my dad collects coins.
It's like anything Steve was on set. It didn't even have to be funny. I just liked any time he talked.
Yeah. Every one of his lines was a punch up. That's all it was.
I love
every
it.
Line.
He needs to be in everything and more things. More things and all
for
things.
A while.
Mm-hmm. He's still doing stuff. He was great in that.
Mad Dogs.
Yeah, Mad Dogs. He's great in Mad Dogs.
He's so good in that, and so Steve Zahn. Yeah. I mean, just.
He added you know, to, he
freaking
adds a,
out.
A much needed, I wouldn't even say it's like humor, because it's some of it's real dark, that show.
Yeah.
But he adds something to it that makes it palatable so I can stand it. Otherwise, that is such a hard.
He was kind of us. He was kind of the audience of like, no, let's just get the hell out of here. Yeah. I don't care. I'll lose the money. Let's just get the hell out of here.
That is exactly it. You can sum the entire role up and no, that's a bad idea. Let's go. Right. That's amazing. All right. People should watch that. It's on Amazon. It's really good. And also, Billy Zane is actually really cool in that.
And, you know, coincidentally, Steve Zahn on Modern Family for a while is their hillbilly neighbor.
Yeah,
is
Bucky or
oh
Billy.
My God,
trash
dude.
Neighbor with the boat.
Yeah.
Yeah, those three episodes with him and his strange
and the
wife.
From, the woman from Dynamics, better get Ted.
Better off Ted.
Better get Ted.
Best
disturbs
two season
me
show ever.
Love how often I have lived right next to those people. Like in my life, I have lived next to those slightly moneyed rednecks so many times.
Yeah. Slightly moneyed.
Slightly moneyed.
Right. Well, you can't give rednecks money. They'll waste it immediately. But they will
make a beeline straight for Walmart.
Yeah. Right. They can have some money, and when they do, they always buy a huge boat and they park it in their driveway, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow.
Hey,
that is
War
my
for
thing.
The Planet of the Apes. How, gonna have some Zahn action.
Oh yeah, Steve Zahn is in the new Planet of the Apes.
Right.
That's right.
War for the Planet of the Apes. Yeah. I was just gonna ask how many people are we gonna offend this episode?
All of them.
All the people.
All the demographics. That's the goal.
All the people.
Yeah, especially the rednecks. They love responding.
All you Hispanic ladies sound alike, and you could never do an American accent.
That's right. I can't tell where your eyebrow starts and where it ends. All right. Here's a classic McConaughey line here. Here you go.
Now, I also have a letter from the captain's widow alluding to her husband's urgent eastern voyage. I have a sailor's log on an Atlantic clipper who swears on a stack of Bibles he saw a great iron beast steaming 2 miles off the African coast.
Yeah, man. He's just so McConaughey in that part.
He doesn't so much deliver a line as he gargles it. We're gonna go down to Maui.
That would
gonna...
be the best description.
That's pretty good.
He gargles. Speaking of Maui,
yeah.
Did you see the new trailer for Moana?
Yeah, it looks great.
The Rock.
Yeah.
Is Maui.
It looks delightful. I can't wait to see it. I saw the Finding Dory was the trailer for that. And it was great. And by the way, Finding Dory is also great.
Finding Dory.
I loved it.
We're gonna go tonight.
I loved it.
I'm just declaring it.
You
doing it tonight.
You should go. I loved it.
The first 30 minutes.
Boo! But Brian's full of crap.
The second half of the movie more than made up for
Dun,
it.
Dunaway's full of shit.
Go get popcorn. We could show up late.
I'm not agreeing with any of that. Dunaway smoking crack.
Okay, Brian.
There was too much worrying about Dory. It's too much establishing. We get it. Dory can't remember stuff. I don't need 30 minutes of you telling me again.
You're a crack eater. You're sitting there eating crap. Big handfuls of crack right now. He's putting them in his mouth. I can hear it.
I want to agree with both of you. Brian Ebbett, when you go see this movie and you need to take a little break because it's an intense movie, the break time, there is a time about two-thirds of the way through the movie where Dory has a mental breakdown. She ends up out in the open ocean by herself, and she's mumbling. This is when you go to the bathroom, you go get your popcorn.
No, I think it's affecting and powerful. You don't want to leave
it in. It is the longest fish mental breakdown you would ever see in your life. And you don't need the, it does not help the film. All it does is bum you out.
I disagree.
It's a great movie.
Could not disagree more. Part.
But that scene is like 5 minutes long. And it's so ridiculous that she's just drifting around in the open ocean, mumbling to herself. That's when you go get your
It's problem. Not. You're, take my word for it. These two are psychos. I have a problem
leaving any movie during the movie. I really can't do it.
Yeah. Do you use Run Pee?
Run Pee is
no. I don't. I just. Oh. I just make sure I go. Listen. There's some camel in me. I think. We'll get to that in a second. I'm sure there's going to be a clip up here where we're talking about that. But no, I think and Tina can vouch for this. I'll go on a trip. Fly somewhere in the morning, and basically I will go to the bathroom in the house before I leave. I'll drive to the airport. I'll get on a plane. I'll fly somewhere. I'll land. I'll get my bags. I'll take a taxi. I'll get to the hotel, and that's when I'm going to pee the next time.
Yeah, you're really
Please
good at that.
Send your medical concerns to Brian Ibbett.
That's right. And he said out loud,
I've never had a kidney stone or anything like that.
Yet. And so here's the thing I would say to Brian Ibbett or to the audience. Everyone heard it, right? Brian said out loud, I have a little camel inside me. I just want to point that out.
By the way,
took it to prom, as a matter of fact.
My suggestion is the first of the three Run Pee times, the first of the three times in Run Pee, and they all come in succession.
Yeah.
So if you... Like seriously, like over
Run Pee lists three places in this movie where you should pee during it.
Where you have at least 3 minutes.
It's okay.
Yeah, right. And you're not going to miss anything that's really substantial.
Check Run Pee for Sahara and see if it's the final third of the film.
From zero to like 2 hours and 10 minutes.
I'm trying to figure out. There's got to be a great trivia game in there where you're given a classic film. And you have to predict where Run Pee says you should go pee during it.
The thing is, it's for movies that are in the theater, so it only goes back to when Run Pee came about.
Yes, it doesn't. If you're watching a classic movie, chances are you can pause it.
But we still can have fun predicting Run Pee moments.
Yeah. No, I mean, Randy thinks it's the breakdown in the fish thing, and I don't. I think that's a great scene. You didn't want to miss it. But I would say, actually, I can't think of a Dory moment.
Anytime Baby Dora is on the screen, you can skip that.
Yeah.
It's a moot point. I'm not going to pee during the movie.
And stay till the end because there's an important comeuppance moment.
That's another reason to use Run Pee. It always lets you know. Yeah, it always lets you know. And it lets you know how much you're going to value it. It gives you a little value statement on the scene after the credits.
Yeah, the scene after the credits.
The film
Zach
brought to you by Run Pee.
That's right, Run Pee. The app you need, you didn't know you wanted. All right, here's a here's a scene. I don't know if your cut had it. Mine did, so here it is.
That didn't sound too good.
There you go. That was it.
Netflix.
Yeah, Netflix. The
audio clarity.
The version of Netflix. All right, so Steve Zahn is a hoot is what I named this file.
Nope. I got the check. Don't worry about it. No, I'm serious. I know. I get it all the time. Sit down. I'll get the check.
Talking to nobody.
You got to understand, McConaughey is gone.
Yeah, he left.
He's talking to himself.
Yeah. As if to say he always picks up the check, and McConaughey is a cheap bastard. Shot a guy with a flare gun.
I shot a guy with a flare gun.
Literally the line I just said. Anyway. hey, remember that fire sound we were just talking about in the last film and a million before it, where there's like a backdraft noise? It's kind of thing. Right. Happened there in the one before E.T., the Robert Langdon movie. What the hell is that called? It's Da Vinci's Chode.
Yeah, Da Vinci's Chode. Yeah,
I just saw the preview for the new one, too.
Yeah, I did, too. Night. Inferno. Yeah. It strikes me as not as kind of having all the same problems.
It looks like it's a lot more action-packed.
Maybe. I don't know, dude. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, it is Ron Howard, right? Again.
Right.
It is, and it's the same crew. I don't know. I don't know how they're going to do. It's fine. I'll see it.
Many
I don't know.
Years skip between.
Maybe we'll watch it on FilmSack in 20 years. Or we'll all be dead. All right, here is the that sound. And they did it twice in this movie, once here and then later when Steve Zahn was trying to stop the bomb. But here you go. Did you hear it in there? The little thing. It's that backdraft noise.
Mm. It just sounds like a squeaky tricycle.
Someone at home will hear that. It's probably hard over
sound, Skype. Though. It's in so many movies.
Yeah. It's like the Wilhelm scream you didn't know you wanted.
Yeah.
Here's that time on the camel.
Al, you remember that time in Morocco?
Oh, yeah, when you made me ride that damn camel that bit my ass?
Yeah, that's the time.
Why?
That's like the Panama again, sort of similar
yeah,
deal.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. All right, here's what... Oh, guys, I don't know if... this is so cool. Brian Ibbett's mom sent me this file. This is a sound clip when you were in... You'd taken a girl to prom. And your prom date lost her earrings in your car. I don't know why. You don't have to tell us how that happened, okay? It's fine how her earrings came off. But here's what... here's
swallowed one of them, I think.
Here's what she said. This is what her date, or your date, said when she lost those earrings.
And if you find them, bring them to me.
All right. She had a low voice. What was up with that?
She did, a little husky. She was a smoker.
Okay. All right. So that's a little young
apparently
for that.
Was... African.
Yeah. All right.
She killed a lot of zombies, too, with a stick.
I found a Scooby-Doo moment, and this is definitely in the latter part of the movie where things started to suck. So here you go.
That's how it's spreading.
What is?
The toxins.
Uh-huh. What, in the dried-up, non-existent river?
No, the same river that was on the surface 150 years ago still exists. It's just beneath our feet now, sunk in the sand, running along the rock strata. Now, the toxins are obviously leaching from their source into the underground river system.
Spreading from well to well.
Exactly.
Ugh. I hate that kind of stuff. Mm. Yeah. Can you explain to me how...
Explain it to the audience.
Is it true that a river buried in sand can still be pumping away down there? That seems really implausible to me, but I don't know anything about geological river.
Yeah, I'm just going to avoid any talk of that because I thought the same thing too. I'm like, this doesn't sound right, but I'm like, whatever. I don't know enough. So
you dump enough sand on something like, you know, that kind of volume of sand. I just don't know how a river goes. That just seems crazy to me. I understand like rock, you know, like there's plenty of rivers, underground rivers that have bored their way through rock over thousands, maybe millions of years. And they've created underground waterways, but sand's different. It's not, that's different. It would dry it up. It would soak it up. It would, wouldn't it? I don't know. Anyway,
I don't know.
We have any expert listeners, send us an email. Filmsack@gmail.com. All right, here's one about, something about dressing up.
Hey, what's with the costumes?
Oh.
The costume?
Right. I'm going to start.
They're not costumes, they're uniforms.
They're costumes.
Hey, what's with the costumes?
The costumes. Oh my gosh, that's funny.
Halloween costumes.
Yeah. This is what I say every time I walk into a Comic-Con.
Hey, what's with the costume?
I don't like that when you do that. something about gas.
Do we have enough gas?
Nope. And then finally, a sexist remark, everyone. Sit back and enjoy 2005 sexism. Here you go.
Ava, I hope you don't throw like a girl.
I hope you don't throw like a girl. Mm. Well done, McConaughey. Well done.
He did throw like a girl, by the way.
He did, yeah.
Yeah. Plus, it was 2005.
Yeah, that's true. Those heady pre-suffrage day era times of 2005. The Film Sack checklist is here, and it begins with two white guys save the world with 70s classic rock. Check. Movie has a bad final third problem, otherwise known as the Stargate disease. Zing! Check. That's how I feel about Stargate, the movie, not the show. In 2005, who had a Samsung notebook that could remotely do anything? Check. Mm-hmm. That guy had a Samsung thing in his helicopter. What was he doing?
Mm-hmm. He was activating the solar panel.
How?
He was playing Peggle.
How? Yes. Right. How was he doing that? He couldn't do that. There's no way he could circle around with a wireless notebook. Come on. That was, I mean, not, I mean, I guess
there's
I need
cell,
to.
There's so many cell towers around there that he can latch into.
Yeah, that's it.
Satellite phones there as well.
Yeah, I'm sure that was it. All right. That was garbage and I hated it. Let's move on to the Star Trek connections. I don't know. Probably some. Daryl didn't send me any because I was late getting him the name, but. Brian, do you or Randy? Did you find any?
Does anybody know anything?
Like five names before you finally got to Randy.
I smell toast. Is that normal? No.
I could not among the principals in this film. I could not find any.
Oh, really? Okay, so nobody. Yeah, there. Probably there's some production people, but yeah, there's. I didn't see anyone where I went. Oh, I bet that guy was on Star Trek or whatever. Anyway, all right, well then nobody that we know of. Soundtrack great. I give it a PDG for pretty damn good. Maybe my favorite part in the end of it was the soundtrack. I really
started
liked
out
it.
Really rough. The very first scene in the river with the boat.
Yeah.
Really rough.
Not good. But later camel running stuff was real good.
Yeah, but if you haven't watched the movie yet, watch out for the dueling songs at the very beginning. That thing we talked about with the Saint is happening in this movie.
Mm. And most of the fight scenes were James Bond-esque type music.
Well, music, yeah. Like the whole riverboat thing has that same trumpet that you hear in a bunch of James Bond, older James Bond.
Yep. Oh, you know what? They have the Sahara soundtrack streaming on Spotify and Apple Music. It's funny. It's listed as Sahara. Music from and inspired by the motion picture. Inspired by.
Who is inspired?
That's real weird.
I see that on a lot of soundtracks, the inspired by. I never know really what loophole they're trying to avoid.
Yeah.
In this particular movie,
we didn't use the original version, but we're going to use this version. Yeah.
Well, you know, like last year, who was it? Radiohead, I believe, had a version of the James Bond song, and then they released it later on. And so maybe that was, they were in discussions and they started making their own song, and then they got permission to release it, and maybe that was inspired by.
Yeah.
I'd say that's definitely
here's
possible.
A funny joke for you, Brian Evett. Guess who was inspired by this movie? Poison.
Poison.
Nice.
Poison. Not bad. And by the way, In a Foreign Land by the Kinks. I love that song. And that's on that soundtrack. So there you go.
I don't remember it in the movie.
Let me play a little bit just before I get in trouble with the. It's one of the ones where they were like in the boat or something.
And that's as much you can play for YouTube says.
Kinks are great, right. Dude.
Yeah.
Aren't they great?
They are great.
They're great. F everybody but the Kinks. The Kinks are the best. All right, let's move on to the Twitter post. So this is where in 140 characters or less, all three of you sum this film up, and we start this week, as is tradition, with Randy.
Sahara, like a story about fishing for marlins that no one wants to hear again, but you force them to listen to it, and it has nothing to do with anything, and we're all going to die anyway. Eat at Arby's.
There you go. Eat at Arby's. I like all this product placement you did today. It was good. Brian Dunaway.
Sahara. Indiana Jones meets James Bond meets National Treasure meets Point Break meets some socio-political movie. Sandecker's gonna freak.
It was very. It was like an episode of Captain Planet in the end. Lame.
Yeah, it was.
Only it wasn't. Yeah. Like it didn't. It didn't really try. Like it. It established all these things that you're supposed to care about and then didn't really actually do anything.
Well, kind of like Captain Planet. That show never really tried either. It was garbage. Did you guys ever watch that cartoon? It was bad.
Oh, Captain Planet. Of course.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I think Tom Cruise did the voice. Didn't Tom Cruise do the voice
of
something?
He did.
Remember
the
one where he was fighting the Red Tide?
Oh, yeah.
No, wait, I'm kidding. Was there really one?
No. There was one where they... No, but there is one where they had to fight...
Great archenemy name, right?
It is. But they had to fight some kind of pollution monster that was in the ocean.
Yeah.
Wasn't called the Red Tie, but it was like that.
I think they had to like beat up a bunch of 80s hair bands to get rid of the CFCs so they would stop destroying the ozone.
That's right. No more hairspray.
There it was.
No more. What's that rain? What's the
acid
name?
Acid rain.
No, what's the rain?
Our ozone. Our ozone hole is sealing up. How about
that? Yeah, I read that.
Yeah. How about that? Hey, progress, man. Well done, everybody. I don't believe in no global changing. I believe it's all done by nothing. All right, next one up. Sorry, I'm doing stereotypes again. I smell toast again. Is that normal? Okay, Ibbit, give us your thing.
I actually have two. I'm going to give you the one that, the original one that I replaced. And I tried to do this using only letters found in the word Sahara.
Okay.
Sahara. Ha ha. Sarah has a rash.
Wow.
That's called? There's a word for doing
anagram.
Anagrams.
It's not an anagram because I used more than the letters given to me by Sarah, but I only used letters found in the word Sahara.
That's amazing.
All right. So the real one that I ended up on, because I didn't think that was as funny, is Sahara. You may think the action scenes are stupid, the story is unbelievable, and the whole thing is a ripoff of Indiana Jones.
Well done.
And dot, dot, dot.
That is a great tweet, man.
That's not bad. That's not bad. And you stayed within your character limit. Well done.
I did, yes.
Okay, here's this. Alternate titles, but the first half was so good, is our first choice. Second choice is, quote, they have big round timed grenades in the Civil War, ? The sequel. We got a phone call from a listener, and I'm going to play it, and it's about stuff, so here you go.
Hey, guys. This is Ashley, otherwise known as Jackalope and the Tadpole. This message is for FilmSec. You guys were talking about the classic film My Father the Hero on FilmSec, and I got to tell you guys, I saw that in the theater with my brother when I was 13 and he was 12, and we were the only people in the theater. You want to talk about an uncomfortable movie going experience? Try being the only people in the theater at a movie about a hot girl and her pretending that her gross dad is actually her boyfriend with just you and your brother. Thanks. Love the show.
So what do you think about incest, brother?
Yeah. Should we sit a couple seats apart?
That would be really weird. Why would you go? Is it just something your parents dumped? There's more information here. I want to know about
this. It was probably one of the few movies that were kids movie that week.
I guess so.
Not a kids movie.
I wouldn't call that a kids movie.
Well, right.
It may have seemed that.
It had Catherine Hagelin, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it may have seemed like one. And I'm saying, you know, at that age, maybe the parents were like, well, you two go to a movie. We're going to go, you know, garage sailing all afternoon or whatever. I say that because that's what my parents did. They would dump me off at the local man theater, we called it. And it wasn't like man's Chinese theater at all.
No girls allowed.
No, they were. They were owned by the same company before it was, after it was Grauman's.
Oh, I didn't know that. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah. It was Grauman's, and then it was bought by the man company that owned all the theaters that became Regal. Did man become Regal, I think?
Maybe.
I think it became AMC.
Man has
become
Regal.
No, because man and AMC were... I had a man card and I had an AMC card.
I got a man card.
You got a man card? All right.
What I'm saying now it has all become AMC.
Yeah,
maybe.
It's a big empty, the one I went to is a big empty field full of grass. And the last movie I saw there was...
The Old Man Theater?
The Old Man Theater. And the last movie...
You just can't say anything about it without it being a funny pun.
Yeah, I like it. But the last film I saw there was Star Trek The Undiscovered Country, which is a long time ago now. Like 93 or something.
Wow. That was the last time you were in a man?
Nope. Yeah, last time I was inside of a man.
You get ready with that and bring Ibbit's little camel. And
Right.
I absolutely love that story, and I love it when people tell us their theater stories because I feel like Brian Ibbit often brings these horrible tales to this and TMS about his awful movie experiences, and when we hear them from others, there's something very cathartic about that. So keep those coming. We love it. You were going to say something, Randy.
Got to go see a movie at Man's Chinese, which is not Man's or Chinese anymore.
Yeah.
On Hollywood Boulevard a few weeks ago, and I was standing around outside. It's a multiplex. There's like 8 screens.
Yeah.
And I was standing around outside as a different movie was letting out, and I'm convinced that with a friend, John C. Reilly came out of that movie.
Oh wow.
Dressed in total like usual. Dude clothes, you know, with a hat on and shorts and t-shirt.
Yeah.
And that's a experience you don't know what to do with.
Yeah, what do you do? You run up and go, "Oh, Mr. Riley, I loved it when you were
loved you in Talladega Nights." Yeah. I don't know. Like he looked like he just wanted to go home. So what are you going to do?
Yeah,
cellophane, Mr. Cellophane.
Right? Yeah, you're absolutely. That was probably his best thing
ever. They're doing Wreck-It Ralph sequel, so he's probably pretty excited about that because he's the voice of Wreck-It Ralph himself. Oh no, wait, was Wreck-It Ralph a bad? Yeah, because the little dude who fought Wreck-It Ralph is not, he's Tinker the Toy Pickler. What was his name?
He's Hammer Boy. Jack McBrayer from 30 Rock.
Yeah. Yeah. No, wait. Jack.
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 Jack. Is that his real name?
Oh, no, no. Yeah. Was it Jack?
I'm thinking of
am I thinking of Jack Donaghy?
I'm thinking of Jack Donaghy, too. That's messing me up. But the character he played was...
The name of the actor is Jack McBride.
Yeah, you're right, you're right.
Yeah, right.
Also really good on Bob's Burgers, by the way, if you ever watch it. He plays a transvestite guy, and he's really funny. Anyway, what's the point of all that? Oh, we're done with that. There's your call. If you want to leave us calls like that, you can do that, 801-471-0462. A reminder that next week we have some traveling going on, and as a result, you're going to get one of our commentary tracks, which so many find beloved. Some of you don't like them, but that's fine. Whatever. I got to do. It's going to be Twilight Zone Season 3, Episode 12, The Jungle, currently streaming on Netflix. Right? That's where it is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited because I'm a big fan and don't remember this one at all, so I must not be that big a fan.
But I only remember one episode of Twilight Zone, and it has to do with cutting off your finger on a wager.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
Really? That's the only other Twilight Zone episode?
You don't remember like the Shatner?
Okay, I remember the To Serve Man episode. I'll give you that.
Okay, so
what about the Nightmare at 10,000 Feet with Shatner or the ugly hospital with
the pig people nose?
Yeah, the pig people, the pig nurses. Do you remember the old guy with the glasses who has all the books in the world?
What about the kid that
came out before? They came out before I was born too, Randy, but I still saw them.
You didn't see A-Team or something. Some shit. I don't
know. That's true. Okay,
true. Good point. All the things that we were watching when we were kids, Brian was in the other room
watching Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Who won?
I kind of like that. Anyway, so it's called The Jungle, and it's season 3, episode 12. So cue that up, everybody.
And I think the one I'm talking about is called like The Casino or something, where the there's a man the from, way
man from Tallahassee.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Called. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the wager is that you can't light a lighter 10 times in a row.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the one that they adapted for Rooms.
Oh, yeah, Four Rooms. You're right, with the Tarantino section.
Yep.
Right? Yeah, with Bill... Just
Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis.
Who got his finger cut off?
Shit.
Yeah, right? I can't remember it either.
Fingerless Joe.
It was a big deal. Who was that? Oh, my gosh. Who got their finger cut off in Four Rooms? Oh, that's going to bug me now. Anyway.
Again, it's been too long.
Finger whore. never mind. I just didn't say that out loud without some context. Let's move on to saying this. So come back next week for that. We'll be here for that. Filmsack.com is our website. Again, voicemails at 801-471-0462. Email us your thoughts, attachments, and whatever at filmsack@gmail.com. On Twitter, we are at FilmSack. Leave us reviews wherever you get your podcast, be it iTunes or wherever. Just leave us a nice review. It does more than you know to help the show out. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time.
All right.
Sandek is going to freak.
Freak.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Sandecker's gonna freak.